Good morning. Today is Monday, October the 3rd. Joining us this morning is Eureka Police Chief. No I words in front of this one. Todd Jarvis. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Guess what we'll be talking about, everybody? But before we do, we're going to ask our question. Why do we say it? All right. So let's get something that's kind of halfway. No, that's not good enough. Kowtow. Why do we say kowtow? Wait, I did that one, didn't I, Winston? Did I not mark that one? Oh, I know what I did. I did it on the wrong side. Okay, if you're a wrestler or a wrestling fan, why do we say lunatic fringe?
Well, you're changing on
me. I'm changing on you because the kowtow was early. I recognize that one, yeah.
Lunatic fringe, I do not know.
Expanding understanding of the human mind has led us to do away with long-established lunatic asylums. But the mind and its workings are far from being totally understood. For countless generations, insanity was considered to be due to the influence of the moon. Right? I mean, we still ask, you know, do you guys have different criminal activities during a full moon, right? Romans revered Luna as a goddess of the sphere closest to Earth and credited her with enormous power. Her mood changes, reflected by what we know as phases of the moon, were believed to be responsible for many mental conditions. Attributed to influence of Luna for many centuries, lunacy also labeled any significant aberration from what was considered to be normal. We now know that the moon seldom has anything to do with mental states. But since some persons who manage to functional show signs of wobbling close to the edge, we continue to designate them as members of the lunatic fringe. There you go. So
not appropriate.
How close were you? Yeah, to being here this morning. So obviously something has happened in the last 10 months since you've been here to take you from, I'll be the gap yes. to, you guys got me for a while. What
yes.
happened?
Well, I decided that I wasn't very good at retirement once I got back to work, but more importantly, the people that I work with, the men and women of the Eureka Police Department, the community that has welcomed me, my family, quite literally, my professional peers in the region. I wasn't ready to walk away. I was very honored and blessed to be offered the position full time. I gave it a lot of thought. I talked to family and friends.
Yeah,
and
I would suspect that there was a little bit of reflection going on there because
there was
a seismic shift.
There was. I'm honored to be here. I'm really excited about being here with this department. And as I told the city manager, that I really don't know how much I have left in the tank. I've done this for a long time, but I'm re-energized. I love coming to work every day, and it's been a long time since I could say that. So I told him, you know, it might be 2 weeks, might be 6 months, might be 18 months. It's probably not gonna be a whole lot longer than that, and I'll tell you why. There are some very talented people in the Eureka Police Department, and there are some great leaders there. And I feel like my job when I got up here, my walking orders were to just fine tune a few things and evaluate some of that. And I think as I continue over the next months, I'm leaning more towards the 18 months.
Yeah. Mentoring some of these
exactly
folks,
coach
yeah.
mentor. I had a lot of people that invested in me over my career, a lot of great leaders that I worked with, I worked for me over the years, and this is a way for me to give back and to pay back. So I want to leave it all on the field, and when I feel like that's being accomplished, the most important thing for a leader to realize in my mind is when it's time to get out of the way and let the next generation take it over. And I have no doubt that the people that I work with today in that department, there's a future chief there, and I believe that group will take it to the next level.
The re-energizing the batteries. Gradual? Or did when you showed up after being on hiatus for a while, you kind of just, it started seeping back into you?
It was definitely a seeping. It was not an immediate. The first couple of weeks, I literally wake up and say, what have I done? But it definitely after a few weeks, it felt like I'd never even had that time off. Like I never skipped a beat and came back, jumped in, and able to take that experience that I gained working in a very progressive, very professional, large police department and scale it down for what works in Eureka. And I think that's the most important part, probably the biggest worry for a community when they hire somebody from the outside, especially from a bigger agency. Here I was in the second largest city in the state, eighth largest city in the country, a large police department. They don't want Eureka turned into that, and I'm very aware of that. So it's all scalable, and that's really what I've tried to accomplish here, bring the best of what I learned, but not impart any of the things that we don't need here.
I would suspect that there would be, because of familiarity, with San Diego police for so long, that there are things that the wish list may never ever be able to occur because of financial or staffing size, right, or just practicality. But you see those areas, and at least you've been down that trail, so you can either take that experience and avoid going down that trail if you need to, or pick the best of it and then apply it to today.
I think that's a very valid point. There are things I learned that I don't want to repeat, and that I want to share with the people I'm working with so they don't have to feel the pain I felt. And there are things that worked. But it's really scalable. I got my first eye-opening. I was got a call one day, and all the command staff was out of town and said, hey, we're going to have a protest at the courthouse, expecting 400 or 500 people. And I said, okay, great. And I started looking at my resources compared to what I would have been able to get on a moment's notice, in my past career. And okay, this is going to be a little challenging, but we've
okay,
got
big
this.
Boy. Now, what are you going to do by yourself?
one ranger, right?
Yeah.
But it all comes together, and the regional partners here, it's just seamless. Everybody is taking care of each other, and developed great relationships with the sheriff and the chiefs, and I know that we're all just a phone call away for each other, and so that makes a lot.
It's got to be reassuring to have that. Is the force? No, it's not as big. But when you add everybody up, pretty much you can tackle anything that is happening. Yeah. It just, I guess it's part of what makes the area the area. That's what the feedback has been.
It's such a cool area. And every day I drive through here, and I just feel blessed to be in such a beautiful place.
Hopefully at normal speed, not with lights on. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Todd Jarvis. Todd, as you look at now the next period of time, what are you seeing as the top priorities with community interaction? I'm sure there's some internal stuff that you want to do and change, and okay, that's great and dandy, and we'll all hear about the results of that down the road. But as far as the interaction with the community, what are some of the things that you see as, okay, it may not be easy, but we got to deal with this. And this one may be easy, so we can pick that one off also. Do you kind of have your soft list at the desk that you're working on?
I do. And it really is, it's kind of interchangeable. There are a lot of internal things that have to happen so that we can better address some of the external things. But certainly, as I've wandered the community and the community events and have met a lot of great people, and I've had a lot of great input, and people feel free about coming in and meeting with me and sharing their thoughts, and I always appreciate that. Obviously, the houseless members of the community, the mental illness issues that we deal with on a daily basis in this community, are huge, and they affect the quality of life of everyone here, whether it's what you're seeing as you drive down 101 to somebody trespassing on your property, to some of the major events we've had recently, like the clean out at 6 and V. It affects everybody. So these are things that are high on the priority list for the community, and I'm here to serve the community, so they are high on my priority list as well. There are other things that are brought up constantly, and that's traffic and the speed of drivers in the city of Eureka.
Really? It's not just a Booner factor?
It's not. But it is happening
yeah,
here as well.
You probably hear some of those going by.
I heard one right behind me the other day. A crash happened about 5 seconds after I went through an intersection.
Oh, really? Yeah. Whoa. You know, something I've noticed in the last little bit is it's not dependent on the time of the day either.
No, it's almost when the traffic's lighter, though, when things...
Yeah, and it's, you know, my read on speed is not what your guys are. But it would not surprise me if some people were going like 50 down Harris.
No.
Just nobody around.
Absolutely wouldn't surprise me.
Different times of the day, but just moving so quick that if, you know, even a cat jumped out in front, they wouldn't be able to react.
So I understand that probably about 10 years ago now, due to staffing, that the traffic unit was disbanded and priorities for that staffing were placed elsewhere.
You mean the motorcycle cops?
There was a couple motorcycle cops. I think they have some motorcycles in a trailer somewhere.
Yeah, probably in a museum.
Probably by now. I did bring my helmet up. I was a motor cop for 15 years, I'm ready to roll. But
now, I bet you would be the first police chief that rode a motorcycle on traffic duty in the history of Eureka. Yeah.
There we go.
I mean, if you want to set precedent.
That could be my legacy.
And it would be kind of cool to hear them around again. I mean, I think there's in town, I think there's kind of an appreciation and an understanding. Maybe it's just visual support. The traffic is something that's being paid attention to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't take long to see a motor cop out on a traffic stop and people start paying attention. And so that's something eventually we'll get to. We have some other priorities before that. I do want to repopulate some of the specialized assignments within the department for a couple reasons. One, it gives people motivation, to learn different aspects of the profession and gives them something different to do for a while, but it also meets some of our goals in dealing with some of the things that we mentioned earlier.
Are those assignments attractive assignments? I think for a lot of us, we see, okay, a cop gets bad guys. Okay. Anything off of that focus is kind of a distraction. But I would think that for some folks that these things would be kind of the core of why they're a cop.
Yeah, people become police officers for different reasons. And some of them, it is the adrenaline rush of chasing bad guys. Other people, it's really the heart to serve. And you had Tim Marcelon on last month, our SRO, and he's just knocking it out of the park in the schools because he has that heart. He wants to be there with the students and the staff, and he wants to be a resource. But you know what? He was also a great cop, and he chased the radio for a long time and put a lot of bad guys in jail that deserved to be there and helped a lot of people. But there's also a fatigue factor where what a specialized assignment enables us to do is give someone a little bit of a break. So some of them, like the problem-oriented policing team, they're still doing a lot of heavy-duty police work, but they're not reactive to the radio all day. They have time to work on projects and be proactive versus being reactive all day long.
Certain personalities are undoubtedly more attracted to certain elements of it. As you move forward with new hires, are you looking for that kind of stuff to see, okay, I've got a slot in my head that we need to have filled. Does this person fill that slot? Maybe not in the first six months, but after a couple of months under their belt, yeah, they could be moved into these areas.
I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I feel like you need to earn your stripes. You need to work in patrol, learn the ins and outs of police work before we consider moving you into a specialized assignment. But we did do something that's pretty unusual, and we just hired a very veteran detective from out of state to be a detective here.
Just bring their skill set here.
Yes. And it's something that never tried before, but felt like we have so much to bring into this police department by bringing somebody with all this experience. So we can talk about it a little bit.
It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Todd Jarvis. Todd, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the detective hire and that this was something that you see as, I guess, maybe a landmark because it is different. And certainly if he does what you anticipate that he'll do, this could really open up the door for a bunch of interesting things.
Absolutely. As far as I know, it hadn't been done here before. We talked to the POA, which is a union, and to the city manager and HR, and there's just so many positives of bringing somebody in with experience. He's from a mid-sized city in the Midwest, a good-sized police department. He's been assigned to multiple different reactive and proactive units, so he has a wealth of information to bring, and sitting him in the unit with the detectives who are already there, just being able to build on that, and they're going to teach him, he's going to teach them, and I think it's going to be a very positive thing. So I appreciate everybody being open to a new idea, and I think it's going to be a win-win. I really do.
How long did it take you to kind of feel like you knew the neighborhood?
I'm not sure that I do yet. I know my way around pretty good now, but there's still streets that I hear, and I think I know where I'm going, but I'm not afraid to get the phone out and punch it in and make sure I get there.
But for him, what is your expectation? 3 months, 6 months?
It's going to take a while. I think within 6 months, I knew my way around pretty well. He'll be a little ahead of that curve because as part of the mandates of coming into the state of California, we had to send him to a certification class here, and then he'll go through at least 6 weeks of field training.
Like the ride-alongs, kind of stuff?
He'll be in uniform. He'll be a working partner at first, and then he'll actually be running the car and having a field training officer with him. So he'll learn the city a lot better than I did because he'll be out for 12 and a half hours bouncing around the calls. So you learn it pretty quickly.
Doesn't have a big desk, is that what you're saying?
Not yet.
Not to anchor to yet.
Not yet.
So you've got some of those elements on your checklist. What about other areas? You mentioned the homeless camp next to the Cooper's Gulch. Yeah, that's kind of become a regular. When your buddy was here, it was down behind Bayshore Mall. That was a challenge. Are there geographic areas that you want to focus on, or is it more types of criminal activity that are going to be the driving force?
Both. I've heard loud and clear from Old Town and the business owners and people that work there that they miss having an Old Town officer. So that is something that I would like to get back in place pretty
now,
quickly.
Weren't they paying a percentage
at one point? Sure.
But now that program was folded into the city, so I guess there's not that entity to help support. Yeah, so the beat cop concept?
I'd like to get a beat cop on foot, on bike, out being able to respond to them. And that will work in concert with our CSET team, with the MIST officer who's dealing with a lot of the mentally ill, and just combine that with some other great things that I've, another reason I want to stay here. The city of Eureka is getting ahead of these things, and it may not seem like that to the person driving down the 101, but when I look at what's happening with the uplift team, when I look at the potential what's going to happen with the new clinician that the city hired, these are all very groundbreaking ideas, and they're getting ahead of things. So we have a part to play in that, I'm really happy after decades of the homeless issue and the mental health issue being put in the lap of law enforcement where it doesn't necessarily belong full time, to now be a part of the puzzle instead of being the main responder. So I think some good things are going to happen. We didn't get here overnight. We're not going to fix it overnight, but I see headway every day. And then you talk about areas like, you know, we have to have somewhere for people to go. So that's really what we're going to be working on next is
those needing services.
Those the people services, that go. Those who are living in these camps in squalor. And
That's got to.
I'll tell you, if you walk through this last camp, how can a human live this way? And what is it doing to the environment? But more importantly for me, how does a human live this way? And they shouldn't be. And our future mayor said, and a very passionate statement she gave to the media is that, you know, in this country, people shouldn't be living this way. And I agree.
So as you look at some of the potential, I mean, there's big dollar solutions. You know, I've been kind of getting lippy about, okay, let's develop a 75-room lockdown facility for the mentally, those that need assistance. You know, the state's got all this surplus money. Let's do a pilot project here. But even if that came to pass, it'd be 5 to 10 years before the structure was actually inhabitable at that point. Are there small little steps that can be taken? I mean, I would think that if there was a solution that was readily available, I'd like to think it would already have been implemented.
Right, because we're not the only community dealing with this.
Yeah, now we're small enough where maybe we're nimble and can do some of these things, and as a template, we could do something. But there are smaller cities than us that are dealing with this situation and having to come up with their solutions also. So you got something up your sleeve here, Kimasabi?
Nothing I can talk about here. Okay. I run it by my boss. But
there are some thoughts that are percolating.
Absolutely. I believe, some things we can do to ease the pain a little bit. This is, like I said, there's no one-size-fits-all. It's not going to be fixed overnight. But there are some steps we can take to improve the quality of life for not only those houseless members of our community, but the rest of us who are paying taxes and basically being victimized, or even being victimized by what we see all
or just
day,
being right? Yeah, fatigued.
Desensitized, fatigued.
Yeah, I think that's exactly. Somebody I saw somewhere that there, it was association with recession, but new phrase now, recession fatigue. I would suspect that we've got a lot of, I don't know what we would call it, mental health fatigue.
Societal fatigue, I think.
And
I can tell you that is another thing that I have prioritized within the organization is there's a lot of fatigue. Due to our staffing level, we're working a staffing model that has 12.5-hour shifts. And you know, that's a long shift with not much downtime before you come back the next day. And ideally, when we get our staffing up, we've got 3 officers that are wrapping up their field training. In the next couple of weeks, we'll be hitting the field. We've got 3 in the academy, hoping to hire a 4th who's in the academy right now after he has his rest of his background process this week. And as that improves, we want to change that staffing model to make it a little more bearable for our staff, let them have a little more downtime. That's my first priority. Once that goal is attained, then we're going to repopulate some of these specialized assignments. Right now, we know the significance of the issues we've just been talking about. So we've maintained the CSET team, Community Solutions team, the MIST team, the Mental Illness team, and the School Resource Officer, because we are committed to the safety of our students and staff that attend schools.
Yeah, those 3 seem to be, I don't know if there's such a thing, I suspect that there is signature programs, but those seem to be the ones that are regularly visited and that everybody seems to be confident doing the job.
Yes. Well, it's cyclical. You know, these are the hot buttons right now, and this is where we're going
to
put our
energy. I mean, if they do their job, then to the nth degree, I know I just stepped in something really deep. But if they accomplish the goals, then there's no more work in that area, and they can shift into other areas.
And that's something that's in the messaging. Because there are members that say, hey, everybody should be in patrol answering calls. Well, actually, these people, by separating them, save hundreds of calls a year because they're getting ahead of it, and it's saving us from having a call for being proactive.
Yeah, it's unfortunate there's not the way to knock out those dozen or so frequent flyers and really just bring the call volume down so it's reflective, but apparently I just stepped in something else also. So we're going to head to a break here, and we'll come back and find out how deep it was. It's 8:44.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:49. We're back talking shop this morning with Todd Jarvis. Todd, challenges exist in all different shapes and sizes. As you're looking at what the next little bit is, you know, the frequent flyers, we had talked about them euphemistically, those that are the repeat offenders, the regulars that you see, that you have to deal with. How many are there that would really make a significant reduction in call for service and impacts into the system?
Well, that's a good question. That's one of the things that I'd like to work with our new clinician and with the teams we have in place to kind of take a look at the survey results from this last year, and also look at our calls for service and see who our frequent flyers are and see what we can do to address them first and save the region a lot of money probably by acting with them. Like I said, there's no easy answer, but we've talked before when I've been on about the categories of homelessness, and it's very general, but it's the have-nots, people who are just down on their luck and don't have what they need to have a home. The can-nots, the people who have mental illness and addiction issues, and then there's the will-nots. And so we don't want to criminalize homelessness for the entire population, but there is a segment of it that preys on the homeless, does not accept services, will not go to shelter because they don't want to play by the rules. And actually, I've asked our analysts to work right now on, I'd like to know how many of our reported crimes have a reported homeless victim, and how many of our reported crimes in the city of Eureka have a suspect whose name is as homeless. And that'll give us a little better idea, and so we're trying to wrangle those stats right now.
How many of the folks that fall into those categories are in need of financial help? I mean, we see what appears to be able bodies with the begging signs on the corners.
Right.
We tend to see the same people kind of, we've heard that there's circuits that they work. Are those folks really down on their luck financially, or are they perhaps just choosing a lifestyle and it may not be as it appears?
Again, I don't think there's one cut answer for that. I'm sure as you and I live, they're down on their luck and they're having a hard time financially. However, if you're living in a tent somewhere and you're making money and you're getting government assistance, maybe you're not. The people I've talked to in my travels here that are houseless, most of them have some sort of assistance, and it runs out during the month. And towards the end of the month, they're kind of on their own. And
so like the last week or so gets tough.
Then they're coming to us looking for assistance with rooms and things like that. So I think that's where we need to probably step up as a region is have that space available.
But have some kind of like a dormitory type of
There's
scenario.
A lot of communities that have shelters like that, big tent shelters or something, but then you have to get people to go.
Well, nice to have you around for a bit, bud.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.